Hello, everybody. Happy Thursday. Welcome to Kayak Fishing Weekly, the show on the Sirius Angler Network dedicated to all things kayak fishing. We've got an exciting show for you this week. I'm actually going to be talking to Mr. Jake Kukulez, the recent winner of the Bassmaster Kayak Series season opener on Lake Murray. It's been a little bit of time. Hopefully, that win has had a chance to sink in for Jake, but I'm excited to talk to him a little bit about his win, a little bit about just fishing in general. Before I bring him on, I want to highlight some of the recent tournaments that we've had this past weekend. Right on the heels of the Bassmaster tournament, KBF had their season opener on Lake Murray also. I want to give a shout out to Tim Isaacs. Tim won both events. The KBF has a little bit different format. They do 2 one-day events instead of a multi-day event. And Tim won the first day with 95 inches and then followed it up with a 94-inch showing and won the second day. So shout out to Tim and all the other guys who had great finishes there. The other tournament that we had recently, I actually almost forgot about it. I happened to have somebody point it out to me, but I believe this is the first native No Limit Big Bass Power Hour tournament of the season. I could be wrong. It's the first one that's anywhere near me anyway. Kicked off in Chattanooga, Tennessee on Lake Chickamauga. So shout out to all the guys that fished that tournament. Mr. Tyler Phillips won that event pretty handily with a 320 3/4 inches. Very impressive showing. Like the name says, they don't have any limit. So it's not just 5 fish. It's as many as you can catch. It's a neat format. But just looking at his total, based on the size of the fish that he was catching, he caught some big fish. I think Tyler would have won the event, regardless of the format. So shout out to Tyler for that win. And then also, we mentioned it last week talking to Bailey. This coming weekend is going to be the Hobie BOS, I believe, third stop of the year. They're going to be on Lake Logan Martin in Alabama, chasing up those Coosa River spots. So anybody who hasn't signed up, I believe you're still able to sign up. I want to say there's a kind of a late sign-up fee, but you still can get into that event as far as I know. So good luck to all those competitors there. And without further ado, let's bring on the man himself, winner of the recent Bassmaster event. First, is it your first big win, Jake?
Yeah, definitely.
That's awesome. I know you... Well, I'll put it this way. The first time I remember seeing you was at a KBF event this past spring. I want to say it was late April on the Potomac. And if I remember right, you were sixth the first day, and then I think you were runner-up the second day.
Yeah.
And I take it that was not your first tournament, but I'm sure I've competed against you before that, but that was the first time I really took notice where you put a smack down on those fish and did a lot better than I did, honestly.
Oh yeah, I love that place. I mean, that's probably my favorite place to fish for largemouth. Is the Potomac.
Is it really?
Once you figure it out there, you can catch a lot there. It's a really Definitely. Fun place.
I lived up that way, so I still kind of consider that my home lake. I was in Northern Virginia for over 10 years, and I didn't fish kind of the stretch that KBF, like that Stafford area. A lot of times I was fishing kind of above that, closer to DC or even within the city limits. And KBF never let us go up into that zone. But mm-hmm. I've got a lot of time on there, and I love that place. Like you said, when you start to figure it out, it can be a lot of fun. A lot of quality, like 2 to 3 pound fish.
Oh, yeah. It's so different than the Delaware, my home water. The Delaware, if you catch a limit, you did something amazing that day.
God, I've heard about the Delaware. That's where Ike won. God, it's been a few years now. But that's the one that he won, right?
Yeah, I think it was 2014.
Okay. So 10 years. I guess that sounds about right. Yeah, I think I'm a little older than you. The years start to run together in the tournaments. It was sometime in the past. I can't remember when, but I enjoyed watching that tournament, and I know a lot of those Elite Series guys struggle to get a limit. So I guess in the kayak tournaments up there, is it equally tough, or have you guys sort of figured out some tricks?
We don't usually do the title section when we do our club tournaments. We usually go like above the title, like above Trenton, where the tide stops running.
Gotcha.
And it's a completely different river up there. Smallmouth everywhere. You're not going to see a lot of largemouth. But the
Gotcha.
tidal section is definitely, it's always a challenge. I mean, yeah, it's a very difficult fishery, especially if you haven't fished it before and you never fished a 8 to 10 foot tide swing every day. It can be kind of intimidating. It's like fishing the ocean almost.
That was what I was going to ask. I'd heard about massive tidal swings, the Potomac and some of the other rivers here in Virginia. It's a foot and a half, 2 foot most of the time, but it's actually a 7 foot difference between high and low tide on the Delaware.
Yeah, if we get like the right moon and the right wind, it could be a 10 foot swing. I mean, you could be in an area with 9 or 10 foot under your boat, and then it'll be mud in 6 hours. A lot of the elite guys got stuck because I think they underestimated it, and they kind of screwed the elites by bringing them here during a super moon. So we had that super fluctuation.
Yeah, that was something that I didn't understand until I lived in DC and saw it a few times. There's some little sneaky backwaters that go in where you can, on a high tide, you can get over a mud flat and back in there. But then, when it's that full moon, a lot of times you'd have a higher than normal high and then a lower than normal low. So I'd get back in there, the water would all get sucked out and it'd be a sandbar for a couple hundred yards and you're dragging over it.
Oh yeah, I made that mistake on the Delaware a couple of times. It's never
Gotcha.
fun dragging through that mud.
No, but it's, believe it or not, I've done it more than once. It's
Yeah,
there's if the bite's good, I'll risk it.
me too.
I guess before I jump into the tournament, I want to talk a little bit about background. I'm always interested to hear, everybody we all in the kayaking world, guys come from all different walks. I know there's some guys that get into kayak fishing from the boat world that used to fish opens. I'm wondering, what's your background? When did you get into kayaking, and how long you've been doing it? Kind of, what's your origin story for kayaking?
Kayaking specifically, I got into when I was like 20. I didn't get my license till late, so but the week that I got my license, I got a kayak, like a 9.5 foot sit-in Field and Stream blade. And that week, I fished the Ike Foundation tournament on our local lakes. They actually did Cooper River and Newton Lake, and that was my first intro into kayak fishing and kayak tournaments. And I never really looked back since. Like after that, I found out about our local clubs, like the South Jersey Kayak Bass Fishing Club. At the time, it was called Garden State Kayak Fishing Club. I think they changed it to Mid Jersey and the North Jersey Kayak Fishing Club. And yeah, I did every tournament I could with them ever since.
Okay. So you've been competing out of the kayak for a while now then.
Yeah, and I've been
Okay.
fishing and obsessed with fishing long before I had a kayak or a license. I would ride my sister's beach cruiser everywhere.
Nice. Yeah, I wish that I had, I guess, closer access growing up to more like public water. But for me it was farm ponds, and it was kind of sneaking into, I guess it's not really farm ponds, it's more residential ponds. And just, I would take my little brother with me, and he was smaller and cute. He'd do like the little puppy dog look, and we go knock on people's doors. Hey, would you mind if I take my little brother fishing? And he'd be ready to go after the first hour, and I'd say, no, we're not done yet. We just fishing. So I think we're kind of cut from the same cloth. We're both ate up with it, and
Yeah,
it was.
that's what I grew up fishing too, 'cause we don't have like a lot of really big lakes around me. It was mostly like residential ponds or like little creeks off the Delaware.
Okay. So, I guess what's the biggest larger body of water near you? Is it like you're not too far from the Susquehanna?
The Delaware isn't that far from me.
Gotcha.
That would be, yeah, I guess that would be my closest like home body of water. And the Susquehanna's not crazy far. It's like 2 to 2.5 hours. Really depends on where, what stretch.
Gotcha. What about like I've done some events with Mid-Atlantic Kayak Bass Fishing, and they've done some tournaments in the past. I wasn't able to make the ones last year to like within the state of Delaware, and it looked, just from me like doing some research beforehand, before I found out I couldn't actually go, it looked like there were just lots of little small ponds, and they're public, but it was almost like a like you'd have a feeder creek running in, and then a small, maybe like 15 or 20 acre lake, and then another little, it would trickle into another lake and another lake. And it looked like a lot of small bodies of water, like perfect for kayaking, honestly. But is New Jersey similar?
South Jersey is very similar. I actually fished a couple of their events when they used to be the DPS series, like the Delaware Paddle Sports Series. But like you, my schedule didn't align to fish any with them last year. But yeah, South Jersey is a lot like that. It's a lot of like mud puddles, 25 to 30 acre lakes that don't get any deeper than 5 or 6 feet, maybe. Maybe by the dam it'll get 5 or 6 feet, but mostly like 2 to 3 feet of mud.
Wow.
Not a lot of structure. But then you go up to mid or North Jersey and it's completely different. I mean, North Jersey, we have re deep, clear reservoirs, rocky, with smallmouth and alewife and hybrids and all different types of fish. Like, it's a very, New Jersey is a very diverse state when it comes to bodies of water.
That's cool. I've thought that that's an advantage. I know there's some states that are like that. I feel like Virginia's kind of one of them, where you can go to, you've got tidal waters up in the northern Virginia area. You can go down towards Richmond, find more tidal water. You can get in some shallow muddy lakes, dirty water, these lowland reservoirs, highland reservoirs like a Smith Mountain Lake where it's deep and clear. I feel like that helped me as an angler, just sort of, when I travel and go to different places for tournaments, I can sort of relate it to, oh, it's kind of like that, whatever body of water I fish back home. Like, have you found that that's an advantage for you, having some, I guess, a wide variety of different types of water to fish?
Yeah, definitely. There's sometimes where you see something new, but almost everywhere we go, I at least can relate it. Like you said, I can relate it to something. Like, oh, that's like Union Lake, or oh, that's like Split Rock Lake, or et cetera. And like, I've seen a lot of different things growing up in New Jersey.
That's cool. I would never have thought of it as like a bass fishing mecca, but I
I
mean,
don't know if
there's
I'd go that
not a
far.
mecca, but well, I'll say there's a bunch of guys. I mean, even the Elite Series, you got Mike Iaconelli, you got Greg DePalma,
Avena.
Lavina, all three of those guys from Jersey. That's some pretty good fishermen coming from a state that, people say it doesn't have the best fishing. So I don't know what it is, but it's impressive.
It's like my buddy Mark Donnie always says, if you can catch him in New Jersey, you can catch him anywhere.
Dude, oh, what's the other one? West Virginia. There's a bunch of guys from West Virginia where I feel like it's similar. Like, it's not necessarily the best fishing, but the guys that catch them there, oh my gosh, they go everywhere. Like, I'm thinking like your Jody Queens, Matt Balls, Mark Edwards, those guys. The guys, some more of the guys that always beat me at these events. I don't know what it is, but some of those states where it can be a little stingy, when they go someplace good, they just murder people.
Yeah, those guys know what they're doing down there too.
I got a non-fishing question for you, because if I
Okay.
remember, and I could be wrong, but I remember the award ceremony, because I remember you from your hat. You had that like Aaron Martin style boonie cap. And I've got one similar that I rock every once in a while. But you also had what I thought was like a Washington Redskins jersey. Was
Yeah.
is so are you a DC fan or a Washington fan or
Yeah, I'm a huge Redskins fan. I mean,
really?
my dad's side of the family is all Redskins fans. So since I was 4 or 5 years old, I was running around with the Redskins jersey, and yeah, I've always loved
Okay.
the Redskins.
See, I'm a little older than you, so I'm, I guess, barely old enough to remember back when they were good. I think I was like 5 or 6 when they won the Super Bowl. So I was really too little to understand the game. So I didn't ever really appreciate it. I understood the guys in the red jerseys, and I understood the rivalry against Dallas. We hated Dallas, but I never like I was I guess I was a fan sort of, but by the time I actually understood the game and kind of how it works, It's like we were terrible. It was so hard to be a Washington fan, like as a teenager and into my 20s. And still, it's like, well, we'll make the playoffs every once in a blue moon. But I feel your pain being a TC fan.
Oh man, I appreciate it. And yeah, it's not easy growing up next to Philly where everybody's either Eagles, Giants, or Cowboys fans around here. So I had a lot of rough Mondays going to school
That's
growing
what I
up.
was wondering. Those Philly fans are brutal. I'm trying to remember. I can't even remember it's been years, but I remember somebody running up and like snatching a banner or something. It was just, I don't know. You always heard about the Philly fans, and I cannot imagine like having to go into school or even just running to people like wearing that jersey the weekend that Washington plays Philly. You got some stones, man. I don't think I'd have been able to do that. I'd have been hiding my head. And
Oh yeah, I got some thick skin from it for sure.
that's awesome. All right, so back to the fishing stuff. I want to talk a little bit, I guess, before jumping into Murray specifically. I want to talk a little bit about kind of your style and a couple of things that you said on the award ceremony that I thought were really cool. Because am I correct? You're running an Outback, and how long you've been running the Hobie?
I got that kayak in December 2020.
Okay, almost the exact same amount of time. I think mine was the following spring when I got mine. Before that, I used Wilderness Systems. It was a ride that I'd had for close to 10 years, and I finally tore it up enough. I punched a hole in it and it started to take on water, and it was time to upgrade. But I've been happy with the Outback, and it wasn't until recently I put a motor on it. But yours, if I heard right, not only are you not running live scope, you're not even running a motor, just that pedal drive.
No, I've never had a motor. I just recently got a power pole, but I don't like I'm not super experienced with it yet, so I didn't really fish with it, but it helped a
Okay.
lot taking pictures of the fish. Like when I caught the fish, I would just go in the shallow water, power pole down, get my board ready and everything, and take the picture. That way I didn't end up blown a half a mile down the lake by the time I was done taking the picture of the fish.
Gotcha. That's a good idea. I've had the power pole, and honestly, I do not use it a ton. I'll take it with me to Florida. I like it around grass. Where, if I'm fishing super shallow, I like it in those situations. But a lot of these lakes, I feel like I'm trying to go up underneath into backwater places, and anywhere there's a low bridge I'm trying to go under, or overhanging limbs, I feel like I'm always banging that thing, and it's for me it gets in the way in certain situations. But I never even would have I didn't I have one I didn't put it on the kayak. I didn't even think to use it at Murray. But that's a good point for taking pictures and holding still. So you're still getting the feel for the motor. But I'm honestly, you were fishing a little bit deeper than I think I was. Were you out on the main lake?
I was on the main lake fishing. I had one area that was like 3 points with rock piles on it, and then I had these three islands in a row, and that's pretty much where almost all my fish came off of.
Okay. So you were fishing, like could were you then just getting up towards the bank to drop that power pole for pictures? Gotcha. So you were fishing a little.
Once I got the fish, I would paddle up to the bank, put the power pole down, get my board set up, my net set up, and then take the picture, and then get back out and set up to where I was fishing again.
Gotcha. I like that. Yeah, so I was in an area that I thought would have been a little bit more protected. I knew we had that wind Saturday. I was not really looking forward to. But where I was definitely, it was not Main Lake. I was kind of up the river. But how did that wind treat you the first day?
It was pretty rough, especially around like 11 or 10 or 11 when I really started kicking up. It was pretty rough.
I can only imagine. So how I guess how far did you have to? I don't want to. Now, let me rephrase that. I don't want to give anybody any specifics on where you're fishing
I
or
mean,
anything. But how bad were the?
they're gonna see it on YouTube anyway. I mean, I
Oh, are
probably
they?
had maybe a mile paddle to those
Okay.
islands from the ramp.
So were you? I talked to some guys that were saying like they were 3 footers out there on the main lake, like big swells. Was it that bad where you were, or?
No, the area
Okay.
I was semi-protected, so it wasn't really like rollers that bad, but it was still blowing pretty hard. It wasn't nothing like Champlain or Lake George back home,
Gotcha.
but it was still pretty annoying.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I know there's certain times, certain bites where that wind helps, but I don't know, something about like anytime I try to stand, I feel like I'm just a oh I'm acting like a sail and just getting blown off the cover, and I get frustrated a lot of times with the wind. If I could pick no wind or, 15 or 20 miles, I'm taking the no wind every time. But obviously it did not work out so well for me, and it did work pretty well for you. 188 and 3/4 inches. Is that your biggest 2 day total ever?
Almost certainly, yeah.
Yeah, it's way bigger than mine also. I've had a few good tournaments, but the better tournaments that I've had, I've never had one against a field that big. This Bassmaster field was, to my knowledge, the biggest, at least in recent years, the biggest regular season sort of non-qualifier event that we've had, that anybody's had. 258. So to beat 257 guys is pretty impressive. I've you know a lot mo I've got a couple of good finishes where I beat 90 guys, or I beat 80 some guys, but 200 is, there's not very many guys that have bested that many people in a single competition. So what I guess I want to shift a little bit to some of the stuff that you were talking about on stage that I thought was really cool. We mentioned that you weren't running a motor. To me, that was super inspiring because I didn't run a motor for years, and it was like one of these, it's almost like a negative voice in my head a lot of times, where I'd see the guys run motors and I would know that they can go further than me. Like even in a Hobie tournament where they weren't allowed in practice, they're covering more water than me, and it was always like a negative thing that I'd have to fight. But I thought it was really cool on stage. You came out and said, "Hey, I'm not running a live scope. I'm not running a motor. And look, I just won. Like you don't need it." Talk a little bit about that. Like, is how do you maintain that positivity? Even though you're at what a lot of people consider a disadvantage by not having, the same tools as everybody else.
I mean, you say positivity, it makes me think of this poster I have. That's Buddha right there. I always try to keep a positive
And for
mindset. But when it comes to that stuff, a lot of times you gotta block that out. Like you can't worry about what other people have or how you might be at a disadvantage. Like when I go out there, the only thing I'm focused on is catching fish and catching the five biggest fish that I can. I'm not worried about anyone else or what they're doing.
Gotcha. That's good advice. I know that in my head that that's what you have to do, and I still can't. I still find myself very easily, as a as a, an example, make a bad cast, skip into the side of a dock or backlash or something, and you say an ugly word or two, and then it just, for me, it spirals, and you make another bad cast, and you get madder, and I feel like that's one of the toughest things about fishing is maintaining that positivity and just like you said, kind of playing your game. So it's impressive. It's one thing to say it. It's very impressive that you're able to do it. And I hope that guys that are out there that maybe don't have the fanciest electronics or have those, the NK180 or the, any of the Torquedo product, and anybody who's fishing sort of old school, like you really showed everybody that you don't need it. And I thought that was really cool.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So live scope. I know, I'll put it this way. I'm gonna have to get some guys on here at some point that are good with that technology. I'm not even good with my side scan yet. I've had the side scan for, I don't know, a year or so, and I'm like anything offshore, it's like I get away from the bank, I get anything over about 10 feet where I don't have something to visibly throw at, and I start to get lost. But I suspect you're a little better offshore than me. So do you have any tips for guys who are maybe like me and get a little lost when they get offshore? Something that a beginner can do with the electronics that you do have.
I mean, I do have a Lowrance active target. Like, I've used the live technology before, but I feel like it was more of a distraction for me last year than anything, so I didn't bring it. But when it comes to side imaging, like, I was just looking at my unit this week. I have like over 2,000 hours on my Helix 7, so
Whoa.
I know exactly what I'm looking at when I look at my side imaging. And I think that that's something that there's nothing I can really tell you that's gonna make you like the only thing that you can do is put time in on the water and really study it and really play with your settings and know what you're looking at. Because once you know what you're looking at on there, I feel like side imaging is almost just as helpful as the live technology.
That's interesting. I know there's a ton of debate in the, you know, the pro bass tournament. You know, there's a lot of guys griping about it. There's some guys that like it, some guys that don't. But that's interesting that you bring that point up, that it's the side scan is, you know, that you think it's actually as useful or just as good as the forward facing.
I'm also not an expert like a Trey McKinney when it comes to live scope either, but
Dude, did you watch it?
side scan definitely has a big advantage if you know how to use it.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to commit some time this year to learning it. Because I actually heard, I think it was Brandon Polinick make a comment. I think he got asked something about forward facing, and he made a really similar comment that if somebody gave him a choice between the live scope and that, I think that's how the question was phrased. He said he'd rather have the side scan, which I thought was interesting. But again, I'm no Trey McKinney. Did you watch any of that coverage this weekend or this
Oh
past
yeah,
weekend?
it's unbelievable. I mean, that kid looks like he's 12 years old and
He
he's
does.
schooling
He
him. Like,
does. And
it's
when
unbelievable though. And he
I
was
don't,
crushing him last year in the Opens. I was watching that too.
yeah, it's like I've told other people this, like I thought I was good when I was in college, you know, when I was that age. It's like, oh yeah, man, I know everything about fishing. I'm awesome. To see how much better these guys are than I ever was is amazing. And the other thing I couldn't believe was they were using forward facing and actually following fish. Like I've done that at places like the Potomac, these little shallow backwater places, like see a fish at a distance and follow it and making long casts to it. But the idea these guys were doing that with their forward facing just. I can't remember which pro it was, but I think he said he followed a fish for like 15 minutes before he finally caught it. I mean, I'm amazed at how good those guys are with the electronic, with that technology.
Oh yeah, it's unbelievable how guys like Fujita, like Koya, he I don't think he makes a cast if he doesn't see a fish on his live scope, but he's amazing. I mean,
Yeah.
it's amazing how good those guys are, and like guys who've never used it act like it's so easy, but when you actually go out there and use it, I know I put my time in. It's frustrating to just be casting that fish and they follow the bait and they don't bite, and you don't know is it a bass or is it not a bass? Like, there's a lot more skill to it than guys who don't use it know.
That's a good point you make because I think that's another area where, you know, you can kind of be like the Debbie Downer. Like for me, like, oh, I don't have the technology. When I see the other guys that have it, you know, it's kind of like the motors. Like it's really easy for me to go, oh, well, shoot, I got, you know, those guys have that technology. I can't compete against that. But I think it's another case where, you know, I got to take your advice and just go fish my game and not worry about what anybody else is doing. But it's like to me, I see that and I'm like, it's well, those guys are just like it's just like shooting fish in a barrel, and I know it's not. And the other thing, like have you done much sight fishing?
Like bed fishing?
Yeah, bed fishing or just anytime you can see the bass and you're casting at them.
Yeah, I definitely have. It's not, bed fishing is not a strength of mine, I wouldn't say, but I've definitely had my fair share of it.
Gotcha. So, I guess like I've never used live scope to where I can see the fish. I've only ever seen them with my eyes. But one of the things that I've thought about is I get sucked into sight fishing, like bed fishing in tournaments a lot. I've had it work out for me a couple of times, and I've had it bite me a lot of times. But I feel like I could easily make that same mistake with live scope. Like, oh, there's a fish. I'm gonna follow that fish, or I'm gonna keep casting at that fish, or just keep looking for more fish. And I wonder if I could make that same mistake with the forward facing sonar that I make with my eyes sometimes. Like, have you ever run into that?
Yeah, that was the problem I had. I had it last year at the KBF at Lake Murray, and that was when I first got it, so I wasn't super comfortable with it at all. And I felt like during the tournament, it really hurt me because I was spending so much more time scanning around looking for fish than actually fishing and focusing on my presentation. That's why this year I was like, I'm not even going to put it in my car. I'm going to leave it at home, and I'm just going to focus on actually fishing.
Dude, that is gutsy to have it and actually make that call in advance and not even bring it with you to have the temptation to use it. That's like a veteran gutsy move there.
Well, a couple of my buddies were laughing at me when I told them, but I don't know. I just felt more comfortable without it, especially at that lake, because I felt pretty comfortable that I could catch them power fishing. And luckily, it ended up working out.
I like it. You got the last laugh. Well, how does that saying go? He who laughs the last laughs the loudest. What else did I have? So we talked live scope, we talked motors. You mentioned power fishing. So like I consider myself kind of a shallow water bank beater. Like I said, I get lost when I start to get out past 10 feet. I'm not in my comfort zone at all. Do you have a strength or are you just pretty versatile? Do you have a favorite technique or style?
I like to think that I'm pretty versatile and I can catch them on almost anything. I mean, if I had one favorite, I can't really pick one favorite lure, but I really like to catch them on a buzzbait. That's just like the funnest way to catch them to me. But a jig is also right there. And it sucks that neither one of those were able to play in this tournament. But yeah, I think those are the two funnest ways to catch them. There's nothing like jacking them on a jig like that. That to me is the best, or just covering as much water with a buzzbait as possible. That's also really fun.
I actually tried the buzzbait in this tournament. The first day I messed up. I dumped a couple of fish and came in with four. So I felt like I was out of it anyway. And I threw the buzzbait for a little bit and I had three bites on it on Sunday morning. And they all just sort of rolled on it. They didn't actually eat it. So I had to put it down. But I definitely try to make it work because I agree. There's not many ways that are more fun than watching them just blast. And the buzz bait, I feel like it gets some big bites too.
Oh yeah, it definitely does. Especially yeah, there's river smallmouth on the buzz bait. Oh man, that
Oh,
is some fun.
I agree. So you mentioned power techniques for this tournament, and I heard you mention a chatter bait, and then I think a wobblehead jig and a couple of crankbaits. Is that right?
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit more about your I guess your strategy, your mindset, what made you pick up one bait versus the other?
I mean, it was more of a gut feeling than anything. I didn't really stick with anything if I was went an hour without getting the bite, I would try something else. I mean, I had probably 8 or 9 rods with me each day.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. Sometimes your gut just works out perfectly.
I like that. So it was just trusting your instincts. You pick up what your gut told you ought to throw, and then do that for a bit. And if you don't get a bite, make an adjustment. I like it. Now, the chatterbait specifically, I'm interested in because I threw a chatterbait. I don't know. I don't know that I consider myself good with a chatterbait. I've had my good finishes, a lot of them with a chatterbait, different sizes, but I have never thrown a quarter ounce. I don't even think I own one. So I'm
Three quarter.
interested. I'm sorry, three quarter. I do have quarter ounce. I throw the quarter ounce a lot, honestly, the little mini max. But I thought it was interesting the three quarter ounce. I think I'm gonna have to go pick some up. But is it just sort of a get it down there on the bottom and work it a little bit deeper? Are you bottom crawling it? Were you around grass?
I was around grass, but I was mostly like trying to yo-yo it. I think that three quarter, especially if you put on like a trailer with no appendages, like that Hog Farmer Spunk Shad, when
I
you
love
rip it
that.
up and it comes down, like it moves so quickly down. I think a lot of times it just creates a reaction strike.
Gotcha. So the
A lot of
three-quarter ounce
guys are
here,
doing that.
I like it. So you're basically just getting it out there, getting on the bottom quick, and then when you rip it up, it comes back to the bottom quick, and you think that was drawing the reaction strikes. I guess more so than if you do a half ounce and it's kind of a more gradual fall.
Yeah, I think it's kind of similar to how a lot of guys fish a lipless, but it's just a little bit different presentation.
Gotcha. Well, I'm definitely going to try it because I love a chatterbait. I do a retrieve kind of like that, just sort of a lift and drop, let it off the bottom and fall. But I'm always doing it in real shallow water with those smaller sizes. So I'm gonna maybe that's a tool, something that I can play with that'll get me a little more comfortable in that 10-foot zone. And was that more or less the depth that you were in, or were you out deeper than that?
The chatterbait, I was catching most of like 7 to 8 feet. That seemed like where most of the grass was in that area.
Okay.
And that tactical crank and the DT10, that I was more fishing like 9 to 10-ish area. There wasn't as much grass out there. It was more like stumps and maybe a little broken up sticks.
Okay. So you're hitting wood with the crankbaits.
And clay. It was like all clay bottom too.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, crankbaits is another thing that I've got to work on that game a little bit. I don't know what it is. I feel like in grass, I like a hybrid hunter in that real shallow
Yeah.
grass.
Oh yeah, that is yeah, that's a killer in the
I
grass. I
used
love
to
that
like the 1.5s I used to use, but you'd bog down in it easier. That hybrid hunter, it's just a great around grass. But those other baits, I feel like I'm around grass so often that I don't get around those rocky lakes. I don't make a point of going to those rocky lakes with the harder bottom to use the crankbaits enough. But I thought it was cool that you made that bite work. So DT6, that's the or you said a DT
10.
10. Okay.
Dude,
DT 10.
DT6 is a great bait too. It didn't go deep enough for this tournament.
Couldn't get it down to make contact with the cover. Gotcha. And then that tactical one, that's the is that a the River to Sea one they came out with a few years ago? Now I've seen those guys in their videos talk about burning it, as a winter technique, just put it on a high speed reel and just as fast as they can reel it, burn, pause, burn, pause. Was that more the retrieve that you were using, or were you trying something a little different? Was it more of a slow roll?
No, that's exactly what I was doing. I mean, I gotta give those guys credit because that's how I learned that technique was from them watching those videos. And yeah, that burn, 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 stop. Burn, 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 pause. That was definitely what they wanted.
Gotcha. Were they eating it pretty good where that whole bait's gone, or
Honestly,
was it more
not
of a
really. Not really. I think a lot of times they were smacking at it because I had a couple of them only get like one hook on their chin. But
Okay.
that was good enough for me.
Hey, as
As
long as you
long
get them
as
in the
I got them in
boat.
the boat,
Exactly. That's awesome. Well, shoot. It's I really appreciate you taking time and coming on. I know I've kept you longer than I intended to. I apologize for holding you up with the technical difficulties to get started. But I want to give you a minute to anybody that you want to thank. If you've got potential sponsors you want to plug, I want to give the floor to you for a minute to talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. Thank you to Bassmaster for putting on an awesome tournament. I can't wait to do some more. Thank you to all the New Jersey clubs and all the Jersey guys for always supporting me and having my back for everything. And yeah, I'm working on some sponsor stuff right now, but I don't have any to shout out just yet. Hopefully, sometime near soon, I'll be able to shout out some.
That's awesome. And I, if I remember right, you said on stage you're going to make it to the Susky.
Yeah,
You're planning on the
Susky and
Susky?
Gunnersville.
Gunnersville. Okay. So you're at least going to get your three in. I like it. How does it feel to be leading the Angler of the Year race right now?
Oh man, it's awesome, but it's early. I got a lot of work left to do for that one.
That's true. But you only need three tournaments. And Gunnersville's a fun place. Susquehanna, it's right in your backyard. I'll be pulling for you. So hopefully we get a chance to bring you on here again and talk to you later, and you can have some more sponsors to plug.
Thank you, buddy. Yeah, I look forward to coming back on sometime.
Hey, are you planning on doing any other any other KBF or Hobie or just local stuff?
Definitely a lot of local stuff. I'm not sure about
Awesome.
the other trails yet. I really gotta do some more planning. But yeah, I love doing the local stuff and just seeing all the guys and getting out there and having a good time. So I'll definitely be doing as much local stuff as I can.
Awesome. Yeah, I did it kind of weird, like it backwards. I started doing national stuff before I started doing the local stuff. And I had last year so much fun doing MAKBF and NVKBA tournaments where there wasn't as much pressure. It's like it was, I wasn't having to drive as far. Those local trails are a lot of fun. So I wish you a bunch of success out there. Don't beat up on those other Northeast guys too bad.
I'm sure they'll kick my butt when I come back home.
All right, dude. Well, again, thank you for coming on, and I hope to talk to you again here, in the not too distant future.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Right, man. Jake Kukulas, ladies and gentlemen. So it's awesome to talk to Jake. I really do. What's the right word? Admire, is that the right word? It's like it's really impressive to me what he was able to do, and with the tools that he has. I fished out of a Hobie Outback, without the high-end electronics for a number of years. So to see somebody do really well, win a massive tournament and $13,000 with a setup like that is really inspiring. And I hope it's inspiring to other guys that are out there that are maybe thinking about, dipping their toe in some of these tournaments, that you don't have to have the latest and greatest, the most expensive stuff out there. I think what's between the ears is as important as anything. So again, thanks to Jake for coming on, and I hope he has a great rest of the year. So we are to that part of the show where we recognize anglers in the kayaking world for different accomplishments. It's a time for the Kayak Fishing Kings and Queens of the Week. All right, our first king of the week. I mentioned him earlier in the show, actually. I got to give it to Mr. Tim Isaacs. Tim had a phenomenal showing this past weekend on Lake Murray at the KBF Trail Series 1 and 2, their first two events of the year. And I followed Tim's social media, and I actually saw, I know he had a tough tournament. He had a tournament kind of like mine at the Bassmaster Kayak Series the weekend before. It had some fish come off, just it didn't go his way. But he went back. He got back on the horse, put up 95 inches day one, 94 and three quarter inches to take the wins both Saturday and Sunday. Two great big trophies. So congrats to Tim Isaacs on being our first king of the week. Second king, we actually talked a little bit about him in the show too. He was the only guy that, how do I word it? He's not the only guy that Jake beat. Yeah, I guess he beat 256 of the 258 guys. Only guy to beat him was Jake, and that's going to be Ryan Matulovich. Ryan had a fantastic showing. He's done great on that reservoir before. Last year, I know he won the KBF Trail event the second day. So he goes to Murray. He finishes runner-up to Jake. And then he also comes back to the KBF tournament the following weekend and puts up, I believe it was a sixth-place finish. He put up a fourth-place showing on day two. And I believe it was second on the day before. Let me double check it. So Ryan puts up 93 and a quarter inches this past Saturday to finish second to Tim Isaacs. And then he comes back the following day and puts up 88. And he finishes fourth. So absolutely phenomenal showing. Ryan's a fantastic angler. And he's got quite a streak going down there on Lake Murray. So one last point of order. So again, congrats to our Kings of the Week, Ryan Matulovich, Tim Isaacs. One point before I forget, check out Omnia Fishing. Head over to that website. We'll have links for the baits that Jake used for his win. So we'll see if we can link those tactical DD cranks, the 3/4 ounce chatterbaits, DT10. Yeah, definitely check that out if you're interested in picking up those baits that Jake had his success on. So that is going to do it for this week's show. Thanks for tuning into this edition of Kayak Fishing Weekly on the Sirius Angler Podcast Network. If you like the show, check back next week for more kayak fishing conversation, and we'll see you then.
Hey guys, appreciate you listening to that episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. If your application that you're listening to this episode on allows it, please give us a rating and review. It helps us out big time, get shown more on the platform that you're listening to, and it helps us grow the show. And if you get some time, check out the other podcasts on the Sirius Angler Network. And of course, have a great day.